Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, John Riley looks ahead to the biggest gaming titles of 2021. Dr. Tony Scott, the co-founder of the BT Young Scientist, will talk to me about the success of the event 56 years on and how they've adapted the exhibition to take place in the virtual world. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. I do hope your 2021 is off to an okay start. I know that we're in strange times. That phrase has followed us into the new year, both here at home and right around the world. But for the next hour here on News Talk, we're going to focus on things that you can look forward to, particularly, obviously enough, from the world of technology. CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, is taking place next week. This is the first time it'll be held virtually, but we're still expecting a whole host of innovation from the big players in the world of tech. The new Samsung phone, we're expecting it to be called the S21, will be unveiled on Friday of next week, which is something else to look forward to. And in just a few minutes' time, John Riley's going to be talking through some of the biggest gaming titles. So if you are a gamer, rest assured there is a lot coming your way. But we're going to start this week with the BT Young Scientist. This is one of my favourite events of the year. It's been a little while since I've got to attend in person because it does usually clash with CES. So normally I'm in Las Vegas. But this year, because of COVID-19, it took place online as well. And it meant I got to go along, which was fantastic. It took place up on btyoungscientist.com. The website is still there. All of the students taking part got to shoot a video and upload it to the website so that judges, teachers, students, members of the general public could click in and get a good understanding of what their project was all about. The judging took place online. The winners were crowned. It was as brilliant as it always is. And this is a project or an event, sorry, that I have a bit of a grow for. I took part in it, I think it was in 2004 and 2005 when I was in third and fourth year in school. And I loved it. It's one of the key events, I suppose, that made me realise that there's more to technology and science than, you know, just the science book that you read in school. You can make things, you can break things, you can ask questions and you can build solutions. So it's something that I am very passionate about. I really do enjoy it. And I was lucky enough earlier this week to sit down virtually with Dr. Tony Scott, who is the co-founder of the BT Young Scientist. He's been involved over the past 56 years, one of the key players in ensuring it goes from strength to strength. And I started by asking him if he was as excited this year as previous years.
I'm probably more excited this year than I have ever been before. I suppose it's an excitement brought about by anticipation. And it's going to be a completely new genre for us. But the in terms of the way that the exhibition will take place and the way the judging on the surface, there'll be no difference. The only difference will be, you know, not keeping more than 2 meters apart, metaphorically. I think the thing is that the way the world is developing, we just have to look at this present situation with the COVID and the development of the vaccine. And the word science has been appearing all over every newspaper, every radio program you put on and what have you. Science is coming out. And if you go back over the years, there's always been something exciting happening with the word science around it. You know, the launch of the man on the moon or any of these things. And young people get very interested in it. And when they hear the word science, then they say, well, how can I get involved with science? And of course, they can get involved with science in the classroom. Of course, that's possible and necessary, too, as part of your leaving or junior or leaving cert or intercert. But of course, science is about doing things. And what the young scientist enables young people to do is to explore for themselves away from, if you like, the classroom setting and to discover things that have wondered them. I always say that really, when you think about something, there might be something that you often wonder why is something happening. And the thing is, if you ask the question why, then you have to, some people try and know, most people would say, well, why does that happen? How does it happen? Can I find out how it happens? Can I make it happen in a different way? So if you like, the word science has suddenly blossomed and everybody is now becoming more interested in science. And of course, the future of as we saw now in terms of the COVID and the vaccine, science is so important. So getting young people involved with science has been our, since 1965, has been one of our objectives. And look where we are today with 500 projects, over 1,000 students wanting to show what they've discovered in science.
Yeah, Tony, the thing that struck me as I was clicking through the different projects is the broad spectrum of ideas. You know, the students very much embrace every and any issue they encounter and they look to build a solution, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you go back years and years, I remember a young man on a farm, and he explained the difficulty was that his father, if he was driving the tractor, he had to get off the tractor to open the farm gate. And he developed a piece of technology so that the farmer would, his dad could sit in the tractor, press a button, and the gate would open automatically. Well, of course, we all have these now on our driveways, automatic gates. But back then, it was unusual, and this young man saw the problem and solved it.
You must get a great sense of pride when you see the different winners and participants go on to some of the incredible things that they have done over the last 56 years.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for me, I think is seeing the young people wanting to tell me and tell all the judges, of course, about what they've discovered and what the science is all about. And I think the excitement that they can demonstrate in talking to us, you know, old grey-haired old scientists like me, if I can still call myself a scientist, I suppose I am in some respects, but they can see grey-haired for old people coming along. And these young people are not inhibited in any way. And they will take you down the science path that they have followed to make their discovery. And I think that's great. To get young people thinking in that way, to be able to think, if you like, around the corner and in depth and everything and make a discovery and make a conclusion, which I think is very important.
One of the key things that always sort of sticks out in my mind when I think about the Young Scientist and my participation in it back, whatever year it was, 2004 and 2005, it was the interaction with the judges. So me, a very quiet, quite a shy student, had to explain my idea, the concept, the methodology and the findings to the three different judges. And that was quite a daunting thing, but it absolutely stands to me at this moment in time, all these years on, the confidence it gave me, I suppose. It was a really important part. It's still an important part of the process, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think one of the things I always notice that if you see the young scientists when they come in on when they used to come in on the Wednesday for the opening ceremony and the first judging, they were kind of shy and reticent. And suddenly by the Friday morning when we were doing the final judging, they had developed personalities, they developed the whole communication skills, which of course people like you have in basketfuls. And this interaction and this interaction with judges and indeed the general public is a great help to them as they develop their future careers.
So, Tony, this is 56 years of the BT Young Scientist. Do you still get a thrill from being involved?
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't be taking part of it if it wasn't. I mean, that's the reason I do it is because I always live in hope and I live in the excitement and I live in the pleasure talking to young people. I think young people are, well, for me, are our future. And we have to encourage them and support them and believe in them, because they're the people that will be looking after us when they certainly reach my age. You have a long way to go yet, but when you reach my age, these are the people you'll be looking forward to look after the country, look after the world, because there are challenges out there at the moment, right across the board in terms of climate change, plastics and everything. And some of the projects this year, I noticed some of the projects, interesting projects on plastic this year. So there's an awful lot going on where young people are discovering the problems that are out there and setting out to see can they, in their own way, try to solve them.
That was Dr. Tony Scott, co-founder of the BT Young Scientist exhibition. I also got to chat to one of the judges of the competition, Dr. Peter Taylor. Not only is Peter involved in the judging of the technology section of the exhibition, but he's also a former winner himself. I started by asking him to tell me a little bit about what the judges look out for when picking the winner.
We look for a range of things, really. Spanning from, scientific analysis, how well the students have really got to grips with the scientific elements of their project, how well they've analysed the data, for example, and how well they've understood the underlying theoretical infrastructure of the actual project that they're considering, from, going from that all the way up to, things like innovation, which is, is more important in the technology section. Looking at just how novel the project is, how innovative it is, how appropriate it is as a solution to an actual problem. And then we also look for things like presentation skills, how well they're communicating technical results. That's very important. So there's really a whole gamut of things there that we're really looking for and we're observing closely for. And the winning project always does really well in all of those things. They typically have no obvious weakness in any of those areas. I mean, one of the most impressive things about the exhibition is exactly that students are very, very good at observing problems in their own immediate world, and also, bigger problems at a societal or even global level, and trying to come up with solutions to those problems. And I think that's something that we really need to encourage, because, that is essentially the scientific process, is identifying problems and then trying to figure out ways to solve those problems. And that is how we innovate. That is how we come up with good solutions. Now, obviously, as we get older, as we get more educated, our solutions typically become more sophisticated, but it's essentially the same process. And one of the disadvantages, of getting older is maybe that you stop looking at the world around you and identifying those problems as problems that you should be trying to solve. And part of that wonder that you see in young students is something that we need to try to hold on to, something that we need to try to encourage, I think, because they do it brilliantly well. And they always surprise me every single year with the kinds of problems that they're trying to address. I mean, if you speak to many of the past participants, they will describe the event as life-changing. They will describe it as something that really affirmed their love of science and really instilled in them a passion for science. I can certainly vouch for that for myself. For me, it was somebody who I didn't really have any sense in myself of whether or not I was good at science or mathematics. Until I actually did the exhibition. And for me, it was something that really crystallized my interest in pursuing science as a career. So for me, it was the platform. It was the springboard for a future career in science. And I think that's true for a lot of the participants who engage with the Young Scientist.
That was Dr. Peter Taylor, former winner of the Young Scientist exhibition, but now a judge with the competition. And as you heard there, the calibre was incredibly high this year. And it was just a fantastic initiative. So props to the entire team for making it a success in the virtual world. Coming up next here on News Talk, John Riley previews the biggest gaming titles of 2021.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you can find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. We are focusing this week's show on stuff to look forward to, because there is just too much grimness out there. And in the first part of the show, we heard from Dr. Tony Scott, who's been working with the Young Scientist for the last 56 years, talking about how he believes that there is still more good that can come from encouraging young people into science, technology, engineering, arts and maths. And now we are going to go through the exciting things to come for gamers. Before Christmas and for the few months leading up to Christmas, myself and John Riley were talking about the new consoles that came out. So we had two new consoles from PlayStation and two new consoles from Xbox. A lot of people couldn't get their hands on them. There were quite a few disappointed people around the place, but the hype was absolutely there. But the one thing that wasn't there was enough titles to, or new titles to keep people excited. But that is set to change. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is with me again now, and we're going to look ahead to the biggest titles for 2021. John, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jess.
I'm going to stop saying that to people now. I kind of feel...
One weekend is enough. Maybe,
yeah, it's enough. It's enough. And it's not that happy a new year, but on we go. So the last time we were talking, we had a chat about Cyberpunk and the fact that it wasn't great. I watched more stuff on YouTube about it over Christmas, and it seems that people really are a bit fed up with it now.
Yeah, it's kind of looks like the insurmountable task. I'm optimistic that they will, knowing the studio that they are and the work they did on their previous title, The Witcher, back in 2015. That did launch to quite a few issues and glitches and bugs, and it just wasn't really ready for prime time. So, you know, the world's gaming eyes basically are on Cyberpunk to see what they can do and what when how quick they're going to turn this game around. So yes, it was a really kind of stuttering start, should we say, and you know, people aren't happy. Even investors in the company aren't happy. People are filing lawsuits to the extreme because they just felt they were led on a bit too much. But I think this time next year, or even by the end of this year, the game will be in a completely different place and it'll be a lot better for that. Just unfortunately, it was rushed to market too quick. And, you know, this is what happens when you kind of try and get stuff out before Christmas, unfortunately.
And so do we have any of the same fears when it comes to the titles that we're about to talk about now? Because some of them are games that have had a fair amount of hype around them. They are from big gaming houses. They are going to be optimized for the newer consoles and so on. So, yeah. You know, is there the fear factor there that we're just going to see a million and one different issues over the next little while?
I guess the case is that no game can ever launch without any bugs, or like there's no such thing as a perfect launch. There will always be patches, day one patches, you know, 2 week in patches, which is kind of good and bad, you know, that you can buy a game and that can continuously be updated and tweaked to be perfect with inverted commas. But I think Cyberpunk was such a huge deal for the gaming industry that every other game developer is like, we cannot recreate that with our title. So we may expect to see a lot more delays than we were used to, because you know, developers do not want to be the next ones in the firing sites from both kind of the gaming community and from investors and whatever it may be, even just mainstream media going, what the hell happened here? So I would like to think it would make, yes, we may have to wait longer for titles, but in the long run, it'll make games launch much more polished and much more refined and kind of ready for market than what Cyberpunk was. So, you know, there is exclusives launching this year for both the Xbox, the PlayStation, and even the Nintendo Switch that, you know, you can really kind of guarantee they're going to be more refined, as it always is the case with exclusive titles. Because, as I said previously, with Cyberpunk launching cross-generational, cross-platform, cross-everything really, 9 different kind of versions of the game, it was always going to be a bit of a stretch to get it working perfectly on all of them. But now with these more exclusive titles launching on these new consoles, we should see a lot better kind of quality for the games.
Okay, cool. Let's start with the PlayStation 5, because this is still, having played with the new PlayStation and the new Xbox even more over Christmas, I do still think I prefer the PS5. I'm not over the novelty factor of the new controller and the different elements that come with the new console. So talk me through some of the new titles that'll be coming for PS5 throughout the year.
Yeah, so throughout this year is going to be like, right off the bat, not only did they have kind of a more successful launch with the actual consoles back in November, with 2021 rolling around, it seems like they have some really strong contenders for some fantastic titles coming to the console exclusively. And even now in March already, we'll have our first exclusive with a game called Returnal. And it's kind of like the first true exclusive for the PS5. So you take on the role of a kind of a space adventurer or an astro space scout called Celine, and she's kind of stuck in this loop of endless resurrection. I don't know if people remember the movie Edge of Tomorrow with Tom Cruise, where he kept dying and had to keep kind of challenging himself throughout the day to do something different. It's a play on that, but you've got some like alien enemies. It looks visually stunning because of being an exclusive for the console at launch, that it's the first kind of one that people or gamers on PS5 anyways can get their teeth stuck into on March 19th.
Okay, so that is definitely one to watch.
Yeah.
Next up, it's Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart.
Yes, so people would be well aware of PlayStation's kind of largest gaming franchises, with Ratchet and Clank being one of them. And this was kind of shown off just last year, and people were kind of blown away by the visual quality. We keep kind of referring to games like this as kind of playable Pixar movies, but this is just another level. And I think what this console, this console exclusive title will be kind of showcasing is the speed of the new storage in the PS5. So basically, it's a solid state drive. So that means it can load worlds at drop of a hat within seconds. So when you're controlling Ratchet around these space planets, you'll be able to jump from other planets almost instantaneously. So, you know, this is one that's going to be a kind of a showcase title for the console this year. And I'm really personally looking forward to getting my hands on this one.
Okay, very good. Next, we have Horizon Forbidden West.
Yeah, so this is a kind of a really, really anticipated, well, much anticipated sequel to 2017's Horizon. Zero Dawn, sorry. And this is it's rumored to come out at the latter end of this year, but I really wouldn't be gobsmacked, unfortunately, that this gets delayed, because it is going to be a massive open world game with, you know, amazing visuals that they're really going to have to make sure it makes the PS5 looks its best. So my fingers are crossed for the end of this year, but, you know, even if your listeners jump on YouTube and check out Horizon Forbidden West, you can see what I mean by, you know, the visuals that the guys at Guerrilla Games are creating here. It's going to look absolutely spectacular, so I really can't wait either for this one.
Yeah, this one is one that I've heard a lot of hype around, so we will definitely keep an eye on that. You're listening to Tech Talk with me, Jess Kelly, here on News Talk. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is talking us through the most anticipated games for 2021. We're focusing on the PS5 so far, and next on your list is God of War.
Yeah, so again, you know, these, as I mentioned with the previous game, Horizon, being a huge success as an exclusive on the PS4, the kind of reimagining of God of War, which was launched in 2018, was just a kind of a runaway hit. It was just super, super successful. And now with 2021 rolling around and us kind of in the year that this game was revealed last year, with a kind of a preliminary launch date for 2021, gamers just lost their minds. It's going to be following on the story of Kratos and his son. And, you know, again, I mentioned visuals of Horizon. The visuals are going to be probably even more spectacular for this title. That's, you know, we've only seen a kind of a title logo design or kind of image. We haven't actually seen any visuals as of yet, but, you know, I can only imagine how good it's going to look, and the gameplay will kind of match the visuals. So yeah, I think Sony are going to be onto another winner with this one.
Before we move on, what about previous versions of the games? Are they still worth getting and, you know, playing, or are you better off holding out for the newer versions? And is this almost like, you know, if you see X-Men 3, you probably should have seen X-Men 1 and 2 before you see 3, that kind of thing? Or are they standalone games that you can just go straight to the new one?
It's a good question, and it's game dependent, but I guess if you haven't played, you know, these titles that I'm mentioning, I guess in terms of especially the Horizon or the God of Wars that came out in 2017 and 2018, and you have picked up the PS5, I really don't think it's a bad idea to try and give them a look and pick them up yourself, just so that A, you're ready for the new ones if you like them, or I guess even look at YouTube reviews or kind of videos of the gameplay and see if it's your thing, because there's no, you know, they're fantastically, you know, well-made games. They're extremely popular, and they've made, you know, both financially and critically a hit. So you wouldn't be really doing much wrong by kind of giving them a look. And I think if, you know, you're signed up to maybe PlayStation Plus, which is their kind of subscription model that you pay monthly for to kind of get free titles and access to their online services, you can have access to the God of War with their PlayStation Plus collection, which kind of launched with the PS5 in November, and you get like 20 games right off the bat, you know, 20 really popular PS4 games to play. So that's a really good incentive to get stuck into God of War. And then with Horizon recently being added to their kind of Netflix version of gaming, their PlayStation Now subscription service, that too then is another great option to get stuck into that game. So there is ways to kind of do it rather than having to buy the two games outright, so that you can try to sign up to those subscription services and give them a go kind of at your will, basically.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something we're checking out, because some of these titles, they kind of have guided launch dates. It's not set in stone.
Yeah.
Sure, it's not. And if
Correct.
You've learned anything from the last 12 months, everything is a movable feast. So if you get those games passes, you can kind of dip your toe in the water with a few different games, see what you like, see what you're into,
yeah,
and then, you know, purchase thereafter. Are there other exclusive PlayStation titles that you're keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, you've kind of got the institution that is Gran Turismo. That was officially announced last year that the sequel Gran Turismo 7 would be coming to the console, and it's always been an exclusive on the PlayStation consoles, and this is no different for the PS5. So expect, you know, state-of-the-art visuals, you know, attention to detail like you've never seen before for you know, hundreds of car models, world famous racing tracks, all the usual. You can, you know, again, Polyphony Digital, the developers of this game, really don't hold out on when it comes to attention to detail. So yeah, we don't have an exact launch date, but rumor is it could actually be in the first 6 months of this year. So you know, it's only a matter of time until we find out more on that title.
Okay, exciting times. Let's turn our attention now to the Xbox titles. Because again, there's a lot coming over the coming weeks and months. What's caught your eye so far?
Yeah, so I guess, you know, as I mentioned with PS5, having a good kind of start out of the traps with the launch in November, Xbox unfortunately didn't kind of get off as smoothly and didn't have the titles to kind of really sell the consoles, but it did. It still was a popular launch. But thankfully now with 2021 here, we're going to be getting more titles coming to the console exclusively. So right off the bat, the 28th of January, we can see the Medium will be launching on both the Xbox, the new consoles, basically the Series X and the Series S and PC. And it looks like quite a kind of a terrifying trip. It's a psychological game, so you'll be taking on the role of Marianne. So you're kind of basically a medium or kind of a person that talks to the dead. You're trying to uncover disturbing mysteries then that are in this abandoned communist resort. So if it sounds creepy, it is creepy. And from the videos I've seen so far, you kind of have to have your wits about you, and you won't be playing this too late in the night.
Yeah, I watched a trailer for this and I couldn't even make it to the end of the trailer. I was just like, absolutely not. That is not my cup of tea at all. I much rather pick up the Switch and play a bit of Mario. What is next on the list?
So next is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, launch that, you know, Xbox are kind of looking forward to or kind of hedging their bets on, and it's Halo Infinite. And if you remember, I was talking about it previously, mm-hmm. This was actually meant to launch with the Xbox Series S and X back in November, but it got quite a bit of backlash when the developer showcased the first bit of gameplay, and you know, the internet said, really? In a negative tone, because they just felt it didn't live up to scratch of what they expected. So they've pulled it back. They're redeveloping a lot of it, remaking a lot of it, and making it as good as they think it should look for what the gamers expect. So we can, you know, the rumored release date, or the kind of the preliminary release date right now, is the end of 2021. And I really don't see them pushing it out after that, because that would be a bit too damaging for the brand. But fingers crossed that they really do this whole, you know, insanely popular franchise justice for the gamers out there. And I just can't wait to see more of what they've done.
Is it not worrying that when they, you know, released that little preview and the internet said no, that the internet said no? I mean, they work on these games for such a long time. Huge amounts of money goes into it. They have, you know, so many people working on them. How could they get it so wrong that the internet is just like, nah, after, you know, a few minutes of gameplay?
I think they might have been a victim of their own kind of hype machine that it, Master Chief, who is the main character in the Halo franchise, was plastered everywhere. He's even on the back of the box of the Series Xbox, and the game isn't out for another year. That's how much they had kind of incorporated him as a kind of a mascot into the launch of this new console. So the hype is another level. It's off the charts for this kind of franchise in particular, because it's really what made the Xbox console a household name. Without the original Halo, kind of, there wasn't, you know, the Xbox wasn't not going to be as successful as it is today. So, you know, there's a whole legion of fans that really expect the best from this icon, basically. So when it kind of came out and they saw it just wasn't really impressing as much as, you know, was hyped up to be, that they kind of, I don't want to say rightfully had pushed back on the developer, but I think even the developer may have acknowledged that, yeah, we may not be kind of hitting the expectations that we built or we portrayed, and it may not be ready for prime time just yet. So we'll actually take that on the nose. We'll go back to the drawing board somewhat, and we'll get the game ready for next Christmas, basically.
We shall see. What's next on the list in terms of Xbox titles?
So the next one is Senua's Saga Hellblade 2. So there was a Senua's Sacrifice, or Hellblade Senua's Sacrifice. The naming is a bit confusing, but it was a really popular title that kind of launched for the Xbox exclusively back in 2018, if I remember correctly. And then roll around to 2019's Game Awards in the US, and we got the kind of first preview look at this new upcoming sequel. And again, visually, as we can always expect, this title is going to look stunning on the new console. It's really going to push it to its limits. And it's kind of based a lot around Norse mythology. You've got some mind-boggling puzzles, a bit of hack and slash thrown in there as well for combat. And on top of all that, it's a bit of a psychological horror where you've got these voices in your head talking to you. So it's quite the mashup. But the first title was really popular, won quite a lot of awards for its kind of unique take on almost mental issues and kind of, you know, people kind of dealing with their own demons. So it's going to be really interesting to see where they take this sequel for the Xbox. And again, there's no exact launch date. Rumor is this year, but that could easily slip to 2022. But we just don't know. But fingers crossed for this year.
I know I sound about 100 years old, but I hate games that are, you know, the thrillery ones and they're trying to mess with your head. Like, we've got enough going on. Will they not just give us something where you, like, try and make a daisy chain or something like that? Do you know?
Some people just are gluttons for punishment. Like, there's the famous Demon's Soul titles and Bloodborne. These are all kind of PlayStation and Xbox titles that, you know, they're absolutely unforgivingly difficult, and you know, people thrive on that. They're as I said, they just love the enjoyment of pushing themselves to the limit and stressing and sweating. And it's not really my cup of tea whatsoever, but there's a whole industry out there and a whole kind of gaming fandom that love to be absolutely annihilated by game bosses and whatever. So each to their own, I guess.
Each to their own. One game that I am very, 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 very excited about is the new Forza Motorsport. What do we know about that?
Well, we know it's definitely in development. It was announced alongside a lot of other titles last September, October, if I remember correctly, when kind of Xbox came out with their, you know, guns swinging, saying this is what you can expect on your new Xbox consoles. But I'm optimistic putting it on this list. I really don't know if it will actually launch this year. This now will be more realistic or more simulator-like than what we are fans of in the Horizon franchise. But again, I really hope they bring in some of the more popular kind of features and settings of that title or that series of games into this more realistic, more kind of professional version, should we say, of, you know, this is Xbox's competitor to the Gran Turismo series on PS5. So expect them to go head to head in the coming years.
Oh, I really do have my fingers crossed that comes out sooner rather than later. What are the titles that you are looking forward to? Email techtalk@newstalk.com. If you have had hands-on with a PS5 or one of the new Xbox consoles, let us know what you think. Did anything jump out? Did you, get the kick that you really wanted, or were you in some way disappointed with your console? You can email techtalk@newstalk.com. John Riley is going to stay with me, and when we come back, we're going to talk about gaming titles for the Nintendo Switch and preview CES 2021.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is still with me. We've been looking at some of the biggest gaming titles that we're expecting to be released in 2021. John, let's talk about the Nintendo Switch. I'm still not over the Nintendo Switch. You know, of all the consoles, it's the one that I pick up most often. It's the one that it's kind of chewing gum for my brain. I just love the Mario games, doing absolute nonsense on it, but that to me is the closest to my gaming experience when I was a kid. Are there more titles on the way?
Yeah, absolutely. And like, you know, the Switch has been hugely successful. 2020 was like a standout year for the console because of its portability and its ease of just getting into games. Like you said, the Mario titles would pick up and people wanted to escape from what was going on in the world. So I think it's up on nearly 75 million consoles sold. So it's still like, it's almost like sold out as much as the PS5 is in certain areas around the world. It's hugely popular. And with 2021, there's rumors of a pro model coming, because we're 4 years in now. Come March 2021, the Switch will have been on the market for 4 years. So there's some heavy rumors or some strong rumors going around that there's going to be a pro model with improved graphics, improved screen, all that jazz, that we can expect to play some new titles on. So the first people are going to be looking forward to is the enhanced version of Super Mario 3D World. So for anyone that was kind of lucky or unlucky enough to have the Wii U, which was the successor to the Wii, the incredibly successful Wii console, and the Wii U not being as successful whatsoever, they are releasing an enhanced version of Super Mario 3D World on February 12th on the Switch. So that's kind of coming with an extra bit of DLC called Bowser's Fury. So again, expect all the usuals of Mario, Princess Peach, Luigi, and Toad. So it's, you know, for anyone that had played it on the Wii U, it's going to be the same title, but enhanced with extra kind of gameplay features. But anyone that hasn't, it's going to be a great opportunity to get stuck into this new kind of Mario adventure.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for that. Zelda is back yet again.
Yeah, so this game was one of the standout hits when the Switch launched in 2017. Like, it was one of my favorite games of the year, Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And, you know, to this day, it's still seen as one of the best open world games ever made. So it's, you know, it's got lofty ambitions and it's got lofty expectations for the sequel, which we know is in development with no confirmed kind of title as of yet, just basically called Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild sequel. There is, you know, a lot of rumors and, you know, fingers crossed that it will be launching this year. And we don't, you know, we don't have anything more solid than that. We've seen a little trailer of, you know, what we can expect. Visuals will look the same, but if it's anything to go by, the previous title or the first installment in this kind of series of the Legend of Zelda games, it's going to be a fantastic hit. It could be seen as a launch title for this new this rumored Switch Pro, but again, that's all wishful thinking. We just got to wait and see.
All right. And then there are some other games that are sort of cross-platform titles. The one that jumps out from your list for me is the Hogwarts Legacy game. I am so excited for this.
Yeah, as we spoke about this before, and it came with quite a lot of attention and all positive attention, you know, coming from Warner Brother Games, who've developed a lot of the Harry Potter stuff previously. This is going to kind of bring you back to the 1800s, and you're going to be a student in Hogwarts. You're going to be customizing your own character. You're going to be going on a magical adventure, casting spells, all you can imagine, really. Spells, potions, battling dark wizards. Visually, looks very, very impressive. Will be launching, obviously, on the new consoles this year. No exact launch date has been set yet, but I think, you know, the trailer for the actual reveal trailer is up on 20, 30 million views on YouTube. So understandably and unsurprisingly, there's a huge appetite but from the Harry Potter audiences out there to get stuck into this title. And you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing more of it.
Yeah, I think you described it last time as the Harry Potter game without Harry Potter. And
basically, yeah.
I can't wait. Other titles are Battlefield, Resident Evil Village, the next GTA, Gotham Kings, Far Cry 6. So there's plenty to keep people entertained over the next few months, which is exciting. And as we said, we will review as many of them here on the show as possible. If there's a particular title that you want us to get hands on and give you first impressions of, email techtalk@newstalk.com. But don't forget, John's website, theeffect.net, has reviews and first impressions of everything and anything you can imagine up there. So do check that out. John, on Monday, I think CES, the Consumer Electronics Show 2021, takes place. It's the first time the event will be held virtually. I'm usually in Vegas this time every year, and I'm so sad not to be there this year. But what are we expecting from the event this year?
I think the biggest kind of product or kind of industry that we're going to see a lot of development in is going to be the TV industry. Just giving, you know, with these new consoles out and people all stuck at home, it's going to be a prime time to get your bells and whistles on for your fantastic new TV technologies. You know, I'm already getting press releases myself from the likes of Sony and the likes of LG, and even Samsung, that are all announcing their QLEDs, their ONEDs, all these different abbreviated screen technology abbreviations that, you know, they're going to look absolutely spectacular, but your pockets are going to be want to be pretty deep to invest in these new forms of screen technology. I just can't wait to see kind of what kind of the quirkier things too are all is what makes CES fun, to see, you know, bendable screens, rollable screens, you know, watches that have cameras built in, all this kind of crazy stuff that you know, you just don't expect coming out of the woodwork. The smaller companies trying to make a name for themselves.
Yeah.
It's going to be virtual, as you said, for the first time ever, but probably as mad as ever.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. Do you think then that people are better off holding, I've lost all ability to speak English. Do you think people are better off holding out on buying a new TV until after CES? Because we will see the next generation of technology, as you said there. We will see the brands showing off the bells and whistles. And that might bring down the price on some of the models that are out there. And I have to say, some of the TVs that are on offer at the moment, it's still incredible technology, even though that they're not, you know, the latest and greatest thing, as in being released this week or next week. They're still pretty fantastic.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was going to say in terms of the price points might come down for the current stuff, which you just said is more than, you know, impressive. Or, you know, I personally just recently picked up a fairly large OLED for myself because it was on offer there in the lead up to Christmas, and I couldn't be happier. And I'm, you know, a really avid gamer, and I've got the latest consoles, and I'm delighted. So I can't imagine how they're going to make the displays any better for the general public, in a way that they're going to make you invest 4,000-6,000 euro, which could be the asking point or the price point for these new kind of technologies. So yeah, definitely hold out. As you said, CES is just around the corner. we will see what kind of the big players, the Sonys, the LGs, the Samsungs have up their sleeves for their screens in the next, for the years to come. And then, as you said, the knock-on effect that the current models, which are just as impressive, you know, fantastic pieces of technology as they are, could come down in price, and you could get yourself a real bargain then.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing that's happening next week on the 14th, so next Thursday, is Samsung is going to unveil, we expect, the S21. I have been reading all of the different rumor forums and, you know, all these kind of leaks that come out, or suggested leaks that are out and about. And kind of similar to what you're saying about TVs, I'm genuinely wondering what they can do to the phone to improve on the device that's already out, the S20. I have the S20 in my hand as we speak. I've gone back to it, having used the iPhone 12 Pro Max for a while. And the S20 is still pretty flawless. So what are we expecting from the S21?
Yeah, as I said, we're coming to the point of diminishing returns. Like, you know, there's only so much pixels they can pack in. The phone can only get so big for a natural human hand that, you know, it's really just refinement at this stage. And it's going to be just small tweaks and iterative changes rather than astronomical, big, you know, shifts in how we use our smartphones. So we might expect, you know, better camera technology, as always is the case. Maybe kind of nice little tricks or features that make the phone more user-friendly for everyday life. Batteries might be fasting, you know, charging faster, but you know, as you said, you're holding the S20 there, which is a fantastic handset. So jumping up just one decimal point to the S21, or not even decimal point, but just one number to the S21, may not be worth it really if you're a current owner of the S20. But again, we have to wait to see what is announced and if it really is worth the jump or the kind of the move up to the new model. But you know, if it isn't for you, the S20 is coming down in price, which we can all expect, and that could be a perfect handset then to pick up at the right time.
Yeah, it's funny. I think you and I spoke about this a few times last year, in that every few weeks there was another handset on release, be it from Huawei or Samsung or Apple. Like, we got a lot of phones last year. Yeah. And the impression that I'm getting from listeners to this show, to the Pat Kenny show, different shows here on News Talk, is that people are... they're more reliant on their phones now, particularly as we work from home. It's become one of the most essential tools that they have. But the appetite to change every year is just non-existent. People are holding on to their phones for longer, and a lot of the technology does stand the test of time.
Yeah, exactly. And like, yes, people are at home more and they're relying on their phones more, but they may be also realizing that their phones can do pretty much everything they need them to do. So there's no need for that upgrade. It's kind of getting difficult now to kind of warrant these 1,200-1,300 euro phones that really are just making iterative changes. So it's tricky, and you know, people really will have to be sold on it. I know that Samsung are probably going to be spending stupid amounts of money, as they always do, on advertising for this new handset, and you know, they're trying to take on the likes of Apple and, you know, the success of the iPhone, and as they always are as well. So yes, people will do the automatic annual upgrade, but others might actually go, do you know what, I have been using my phone a lot more, but it's more than capable of what I needed for, you know, with lockdown life. I really don't need to be spending the, you know, my savings or whatever it may be on something that I, you know, I don't actually need, because I'm not, unfortunately, you know, we're not traveling, we're taking the photos, we're not relying on our batteries as much, we're not doing as much kind of leaving the house, even, that your phone doesn't necessarily need to have all the bells and whistles that are kind of thrown in just to make it look more appealing than the current model. So yeah, it's really up to, it's kind of the control is in the customer's hands a bit more than usual this year.
Yeah, another thing I'm actually really excited to see from CES next week is if the pandemic will influence the type of technology being launched. Like, the first device that has arrived in on my desk for review this year, and I know we're only a few days into it, but it was a UV sanitization device for your smartphone. Wow. And it kind of hits me as a bit funny in that we'd never really review those devices or talk about those devices aside from the fact that we're in a global pandemic. And I wonder if there will be a big emphasis on technology for, you know, working from home, whether it is a smart desk, a smart chair that can help your posture, all that kind of stuff. I wonder, because we're such an agile industry, I wonder will the innovators have adapted to showcase how they can make the most out of what is a sort of, I suppose, generally accepted crappy time.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting to see what kind of quirky stuff we haven't, as you said, we wouldn't even be on our radar. You know, UV, you know, bacteria killing light for your smartphone is just something that you'd scoff at a couple of years ago, but now it's like, actually, that could be something of benefit. And going back to my point of the iterative updates made to kind of these smartphones coming out, that, you know, Samsung may put a lot of preference or a lot of resources on developing, you know, much improved visuals or much improved optics for the selfie camera. Knowing that people are doing a lot more video calls even on their phones, that, you know, they want to make the audio capture better, so the microphones might be improved with surround, something like surround sound or something silly, or something that could be really beneficial to people that have only got a phone sometimes to do their calls for work or their video calls with clients. That, yeah, we could actually see them, you know, looking at the software side of things, looking at the hardware side of things, for something as simple as a selfie camera, making it the best they can, so that therefore that then becomes quite the USP for that handset for the year that we're in and for the world we're living in. So,
yeah, no, it's definitely an exciting time, I think, to be involved in the world of technology. And as you said, only time will tell what we will see next week. But for the moment, John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, thank you so much for taking us through those gaming titles, previewing CES 21, and hopefully we will chat again very soon.
Cheers, Jess.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on the Newstalk app in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. John Fardy's up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.